On election day, millions of Americans showed up to the polls despite the most expensive PSYOP in history. A multi-year PSYOP aimed at making them feel afraid. Making them feel like bad people. Calling them the F-word just for being who they are.
Well, we don't have to feel afraid anymore.
It's time to stand up, be bold, and take back the narrative.
They can't bully us for how we feel. Not anymore.
I think Lynn Alden is hot.
Lynn Alden is hot.
Lynn Alden is hot.
That Lynn Alden is a smoking hot babe, and I'm no F-word for thinking so. Wanting to motorboat her macro titties does not make me a fascist.
No more hiding in the shadows. People who think Lynn Alden is hot are the backbone of this country. Join us. Let's build the future together.
Is there any doubt in your mind that Bitcoin has already won? If so, you obviously haven't listened to enough Bitcoin podcasts yet. This is hyper-Bitcoinization, and the world is rapidly changing before our eyes. You are about to listen to the most credentialed and thermodynamically sound Bitcoin podcast in the world. Get ready, because this is the Bugle Weekly.
Welcome to this edition of the Bugle Weekly. This is the Selection Autopsy Show. Joining me today, as usual, is Rod Palmer. What's going on, Rod?
Pleasure to be with you guys here today. And man, I was just, I know we're going to go into this, but I was just looking at that meme. We're talking about it before we started, from Sicario. And it's, if you live in a third world country and you see a dude that looks like an accountant with a thousand word stare, it's over for you, dog. And I'm looking at that dude, the guy from Sicario. I'm like, that's Dennis Porter to me. Like, if you live in Washington, D.C., or you work in the bureaucracy, or you work in government, and you see this dude that was like Dennis Porter walking your way, it's over for you. You're going to be orange-pilled by the time that interaction ends, or your bureaucracy is going to be orange-pilled. He's like the orange-pilled assassin. It's like the secret weapon.
Well, I think it's going to be a little bit of time before Dennis Porter is seen traversing the global south, because he still has some conquering to do here in the United States. He's trying to find the politicians who have not heard of him yet and orange-pill them. But it's proving challenging. It's taken a lot of them. They don't read breaking tweets on Twitter, which I think is one of the setbacks. You know, because you have to think, a lot of these politicians, there aren't term limits. Most of them are boomers, and you know, they don't even know how to type on a keyboard, on a computer, let alone use an iPhone. So they're not going to be reading Dennis's breaking tweets.
Right. Yeah. And no, it's, I think with Dennis's big task coming up is he did go out of his way to orange pill, you know, most of the swamp, the state. And now that Donald Trump has won, which we're going to get into in this selection special, there's going to be a lot of change. There's going to be a lot of cleaning house. There's going to be a lot of the swamp's going to be drained, and it's going to be replaced with, more efficient, thermodynamically sound bureaucrats. And those new people are going to have a lot of power. Dennis Porter has to now orange pill them if they aren't already orange pilled, or help find the orange pilled people who are qualified for these new jobs under Trump.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be really interesting. Like, you know, with most people that have been into Bitcoin, they've been some, you know, they've been a part of this punk rock cultural shift. You know, they're just doing stuff that the rest of the population doesn't think is cool. You know, so like when somebody thinks that watching Keeping Up with the Kardashians or the Bachelorette, when they think that's cool, you know that you're actually cool when they think what you're doing is not cool. You know what I mean? Because they sit around and they watch nonsense on TV and are bombarded by CIA created advertisements to brainwash them into various nonsensical activities, very like high tide preference behavior But like those people are going to start realizing that Bitcoin's cool and they're going to start coming and using it. And then it's not going to be as cool anymore. And so the cool thing in a world where Bitcoin has won is to actually resist Bitcoin, if that makes sense.
That makes sense. And I think right now, Donald Trump is surrounded by Elon Musk, David Bailey from Bitcoin Magazine, Ron Paul, basically all the biggest influencers on Bitcoin Twitter. He's with them right now, and he's trying to game plan this new punk rock government that he's going to build, because he's got a mandate. It was a huge, huge landslide election. And so they're going to have to hire a lot of Bitcoiners and Bitcoin podcasters and just cypherpunks in the space to help them build this new path forward. And they need to have a really strict hiring process. And I think that they should make everybody who wants to apply for one of these new positions take a lie detector test and answer the question, do you think Lynn Alden is hot? Because if they say no, I feel like that is kind of a spook or a status of Fed from the old regime trying to get back in. And I don't think they've listened to enough Bitcoin podcasts to be worthy of this employment. It's going to be very high standards.
Yeah. Well, before we jump into all this stuff, so we didn't do an official recap of what just happened. Did you want to start that off, or do you want me to start that off?
Well, yeah, you start that one off, because, I guess I've jumped ahead of myself, but yeah, how did we get here?
Well, America went to the polls and voted Donald Trump. They selected Donald Trump as the next president of the United States. And there were lots of thoughts on that. You know, there were a lot of October surprises. There were a lot of November surprises, even leading into the selection. With Hillary Clinton killing Peanut the chipmunk or squirrel.
Brutal.
Yeah, that was substantially worse than the WikiLeaks DNC leaks in 2015 or 2016. I want to pull up the New York Times selection map. I think a lot of Americans, they weren't very excited about the selection. I think that was that's kind of the general feel that I got.
Right. They didn't do a good enough job of like marketing and hyping it. They didn't do a good job of like making it, it just wasn't as culture wasn't saturated with politics. I mean, people were just, they wanted to live their lives and nobody wanted to vote. Nobody wanted to talk about politics. So they probably should have spent more money and just put more effort behind making it a big event.
Yeah. I mean, it was kind of disappointing as far as the state of Super Bowl, but I don't think it's, wow.
Well, no, the New York Times. And I think as we predicted, if you look at the statistics in most of these precincts, the amount of podcast hours that people listen to per capita really is correlated with how the vote went. It was really the podcaster, the candidates who were on podcasts who did well.
Yeah, that was a big takeaway. But I think, you know, a lot of Americans were, you know, essentially convinced by the CIA psyop that Kamala was going to win. And they watched as that didn't happen, and as the first Bitcoin pleb was selected into the White House. I think America decided that Bitcoin won. I think America, you know, initially, it seems like a good portion of America has chosen PodConf as the winner of this selection. Trump kind of did a good job of like straddling PodConf and like the actual ethos of Bitcoin. He didn't have to say anything about privacy or surveillance, but all he had to do in that regard to win a lot of people over was talk about freeing Ross. to essentially, you know, kind of get the buy-in from the non-PodConf people. Because, like, you know, PodConf likes to support Ross to some extent. But I think a lot of, like, PodConf think that Ross is bad for NGU. And they don't like memory of the Silk Road. Like, they almost want everybody to forget about the Silk Road and forget that people can be non-compliant with Bitcoin.
It's a lot of people are willing to wear a Free Ross t-shirt at the Bitcoin conference, but they're not as willing to wear it, you know, on Capitol Hill. You know, I don't think Dennis Porter, anybody except Dennis Porter at the, you know, on in Washington, especially with the Bitcoin Policy Institute, is wearing Free Ross t-shirts into their meetings, with politicians.
Yeah. But, I think for a lot of us, Ross is a hero, you know, and Ross is a hero for me personally because he really paved the way for non-KYC peer-to-peer cigarette markets.
And for some people, he's kind of like a pin that you have to put on your suit so people know that you're, you know, patriotic enough or, you know, Bitcoiner enough.
Yeah. I mean, like Haley Walsh, you know, for example, is a big Free Ross proponent, but she came in here having zero proof of listening to 40 hours of Bitcoin podcasts.
Right.
A week.
Right. It's so like, that was like somebody paid her to post that. But
yeah,
you know, we both made our endorsements last week, but that aside, a lot of people were very surprised by the results on the selection. But, you know, despite our endorsements, we were not surprised at the outcome. We've been, you know, talking on this show and off this show that we saw this, you know, Donald Trump was going to win by a landslide. We saw it coming. Why do you think we saw that coming, but so many people did not see it?
Well, I think the majority of the population has not caught on to this idea of pseudo spoofing.
Civil attacks.
And yeah, civil attacks. So essentially what a civil attack is, and if you don't know what this is, you haven't been listening to enough Bitcoin podcasts, so you should probably get on that a little bit more. After this one, listen to another one. But essentially, what a civil attack or pseudo-spoofing is where individuals go on a platform and they manipulate it to make it seem like more people have an opinion than they do. And, like, right, you know, Reddit's the prime example of this. This is the reason why the Reddit mods on r/Bitcoin are super gay. They don't think Lynn Alden's hot, and they always kick the bugle off as soon as we post something in that subreddit. They don't want individuals to actually, like, you know, propose any sort of realistic sense of truth. They want to gatekeep, and they want to convince people that people think a specific way. But imagine, like, the super gay r/Bitcoin mods are controlling all the different social media platforms simultaneously.
Right. So some people who have listened to a lot of Bitcoin podcasts are familiar with a civil attack, and they're thinking, well, this is what they're calling a civil attack or pseudo spoofing, but that's when, you know, your node connects, and it's very difficult in a decentralized network to know if you have connected to, you know, an honest node, or if you've connected to a network that is all dishonest nodes. So you're getting, you know, you have 20 connections, they're all dishonest, and they're really all, being controlled by one source, and you just kind of get in this echo chamber. But in the, you know, in the Bitcoin network, that can happen. But in a wider sense, you get on Twitter or any social media platform, and you're seeing a bunch of different users, and you're seeing a bunch of different people interacting, fighting and arguing, agreeing, retweeting each other. Some of them are famous, but there's a flood of people that could be a real person. It could be somebody you know. It could be a bot. It could be a Russian bot. It could be a Democrat bot, Republican bot. You know, and some of those could all be together, but they're being funded by different people, different organizations, different PACs, different federal agencies, different countries. They all have these armies of these pseudonyms fake accounts, these bots. And some of them can actually be controlled by real people in this way. They seem very real, but many are controlled by AI. So if you see, a post from a Democrat or a Republican and it's got 100,000 likes, 20,000 retweets, Elon Musk made it private, so you don't see who likes anymore. You don't know if they're real. They could have been purchased with these bots. But anyways, you don't know what's real, and you don't know if any of these accounts are real people, or is it just part of this cyber psyop? And that's across everything that you see digitally. And so the people then you might interact with in real life, they might be parroting what one of these nodes, has programmed them to say. So you might think that that's real life now, because the network has just been captured by people who don't think when old is on.
Yeah, it's very confusing. So yeah, I think, so the majority of activity that happens on the internet, I'm pretty convinced is pseudo spoofing.
Right.
And how do
you spot that?
Well, I think like one of the biggest ways to spot it is you actually interact with people, in the real world. And so you're kind of grounded into reality of like where people are at right now. And smoking a lot of cigarettes helps you, kind of look through the matrix. Like there are days where I smoke enough and I just see like the green binary code going down. And the simulation kind of shows through a little bit, but reading Ayn Rand helps, and probably number, if not number one, number two on the list. I think smoking cigarettes might be number one. Number two on the list is reading, listen to a lot of podcasts. So if you listen to enough podcasts,
yeah. You said like interacting with people. Mm-hmm. Doggy DMing. Are you in group chats? Are these people in your group chat? Are they vouched by somebody in your group chat? You see like a crazy retweet, you're like, oh, that's my buddy from my meetup or this other group chat. He's just trolling. I'm like, oh, okay, that makes sense. Or like, are these people bots, or are they just like retweeting the bots' memes? Some people are just retweeters. They'll just retweet any meme, no matter how good or bad it is. You just kind of, So they're on what you're saying, because you're making more sense to me.
Yeah, I think you just have to, you kind of need entropy in your life to get an understanding of what's going on in the world. Because if you're too reliant on just Twitter, for example, and all you see is the pseudo spoofing, it's kind of hard to be able to see through it. So you have to have like a good grasp on, what's generally happening. You have to be somewhat rooted in who you are as an individual.
Right. Here's another one I thought of is, when you see some like a post, and it's got a lot, it's got like 25, 30,000 likes, 10,000 retweets, but all the replies are people calling them scammers or telling them to eat shit or making fun of them. But there's like no replies that are like, hell yeah, this is really cool. So like when you see, somebody in the Bitcoin space, for example, they might post something like, this is my company and this is how great we're doing. And everybody in the comments is like, you're a fucking scammer. Eat shit. That's how you know it might be a funded spoof.
Well, I think one thing that I wanted to talk about in specific is to like, how do we know how the selection was going to play out and other people didn't? Is, another example of pseudo spoofing is stuff like Saturday Night Live.
Yes.
So Saturday Night Live has pseudo spoofed the world into thinking that it's funny. Or that people think it's funny. So, like the average person watches it and they're like, this isn't funny, this is stupid.
But everybody else thinks it's funny. Everybody at work thinks this is hilarious.
Yeah, that's what they want people to think. Kind of in the way that, like, they want people to think, like, the Oscars are relevant. There's these clubs for people that hang out at Diddy parties. And when you're on the outside looking in, you're like, you guys are a bunch of retards, and you're not funny. But, like, to them, they think they're, like, the funniest people in the world, and then they spend a lot of time and energy convincing people that that's the case. But they had Kamala Harris on, you know, right after Hillary killed Peanut, and it was not funny at all. It was really bad.
Bad taste.
Yeah. That was the point. That was the point where America realized that SNL wasn't funny and that nobody on earth outside of those at Diddy parties thought it was funny.
Right. There's a certain point where somebody does something and so shameless. And it's like, how could anybody do that without feeling shame? Unless it was their job, unless that was what they're getting paid to do. You know, it's like the press secretary for the president, and they come out and they say the most dishonest, shameful things. And you're like, how could anybody say that with a straight face? How could they actually believe that? Oh, it's easy. He's getting paid to say that. That's the only way. It's his job. So when you see situations like that on SNL or, you know, some of these Diddy endorsements, it's like, how could you possibly say something like that? How could you possibly do something like that? Well, we found out it's because you're, you know, that is your job. That is what you're paid to do in that situation.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, SNL has been hemorrhaging and destroying itself for a while. And, like, one of the biggest ways they did it, you know, was firing Shane Gillis. It's a very poor decision.
And they fired Shane Gillis and made up for it by instituting the DEI department in their hiring.
Yeah. And then they sucked Kamala's vag on TV in front of the nation. When they were recovering from the assassination of this squirrel.
Cardi B just did that, you know, sucked her vag right there live, no censorship, it was just distasteful.
It's not what America wanted to see. Not at all.
Right. That's what you're supposed to see in the women's locker room, not on Saturday Night Live.
Yeah. But that was, like, a really powerful moment in American culture and American political history, because that was a moment where, you know, people watched this very non-funny, pretend-to-be-funny, once historic and innovative TV show just kill itself in front of the whole world. And they're like, okay, I think everybody around me realizes they're also not funny. When Kamala is sitting and, like, you know, pretend laughing into, I mean, she was probably, like, real laughing because she, like, thought he was funny. You know, like, you know, a lot of these politicians, the reason why a lot of people have kids is because they're not funny, right? And so, like, one of the great benefits of having
it's like if you can't orange pill somebody, nobody will listen to your orange pill. If you have kids, at least you can orange pill them. And it's like, if you have kids, they have to laugh at your jokes.
Yeah. I mean, that's the reason why people have kids, is because they want at least one person in their life to laugh at their jokes.
Right. And go ahead.
Well, and this is something that the political left has such a hard time with, is, you know, they a lot of them are very, like, anti-kid. Like, they don't really want...
I think you're getting off on a little bit of a tangent here, because I think the main message of what happened this week was that we were all kind of getting sick and tired of laughing at people's jokes that weren't funny. And we're decided to give him the benefit of the doubt for a little while longer, because the election was coming up and we would see in the election, like, it was funny, it wasn't. And, like, who had the best memes? Was it Trump or was it Kamala? Was it SNL? And then the election's in a landslide. It's like, oh, I don't have to laugh at these people's jokes anymore. They have to laugh at my memes. They have to laugh at my jokes, even if they say you're retarded in them. They have to put that on TV now. And so that's what I think. It's a reset of like, whose jokes do we have to laugh at now? The left or the right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think what kind of has been ushered in is a free market of jokes.
Yes. It's price discovery on Bitcoin and comedy podcasts. I think we're going to really find the value of podcasts that are funny and witty, especially if they're about Bitcoin. We're going to see the value of those skyrocket, because now we know which jokes we're allowed to laugh at. We have that regulatory clarity.
Yeah.
I can share this meme at work and not get fired.
Well, this is one of the reasons why PodConf is so fucked. Is because, you know, all of PodConf is ruled by HR departments, which are inherently anti-funny.
Right.
And so they're never going to be able
to... just got voted out.
Yeah. Like, I think like one of the basic standards for a Bitcoin podcast, and whether it has the potential to be funny or not, is whether or not the host of the show are able to say something remotely close to Lynn Alden is hot. And right. Like, most of them are too afraid to say something like that for some reason. And I think it's because they have HR breathing down their throats.
If HR loses its influence and authority to tell you which jokes you can laugh at, or HR loses its ability to intimidate you into saying that Lynn Alden is not hot, they disintegrate. Once they lose that authority, jokes and Lynn Alden, there's nothing left for them. They just get cut. So we have, you know, Americans, it wasn't on the ballot explicitly, but it is a huge blow to HR departments across the country, private and public.
Yeah. America wants funny podcasts, and they want funny people in general. They're tired of not having fun. They're tired of, you know, boring compliance talk. They're tired of, you know, corporate jargon. They're tired of being lectured by a woman with a bachelor's degree in human resources or some sort of social science.
It stifles the creativity to determine what is compliant and what is not. Instead of giving you a rule set of compliance, it's now up to you to create the compliance that you want to see in the world. And that will be what is considered. It's like the most proof of work. However you work to redefine compliance, the more likely that everybody now will follow that chain.
Yeah. One topic I did want to talk about. I mean, to kind of recap the recap of the selection, Trump won. It wasn't a big surprise to us as credentialed journalists. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. You know, there's still a very, like, I know there's still BlackRock actors that start in their commercials out there, roaming free. There's some talks about, you know, Iran getting a little bit frisky. But it's looking like he's probably going to be in the White House here in a couple months, but there's a lot that can happen between now and then. Bitcoin is going up real quick. It's over 100,000 Canadian pesos. So they beat America to 100K again. They're at like 111 right now. America's lagging behind that, but it looks like we're catching up slowly but surely. Bitcoin price at the time of recording is trading around 80,000 USDT. I'm kind of hoping that when this gets released tomorrow, it's going to be a little bit higher. But I think people are generally feeling bullish. I completely forgot where I was going with this, because I had a topic that I wanted to segue to.
Yeah, you're trying to go into another topic, which was it was either Dennis Porter or it was Bitcoiners in the White House, I think.
Well, those are two. Oh, no. It was neither of those, actually. It's the State of the Libertarian Party. So
there we go.
Another group of people that killed themselves was the Libertarian Party. So I endorse Chase Oliver. But the chair of the Libertarian Party couldn't even go as far to do that. She was on your side, endorsing Trump, which is pretty interesting. But it looks like the Libertarian Party is growing increasingly more irrelevant and silly. And
what do you think caused this? So they did relatively well politically, in terms of getting votes in 2016 and 2012. I think even in 2020, although I don't remember that well, but two of those elections, they elected Gary Johnson to be on the head of their ticket, right? And so it was, they didn't really pick a libertarian to be at the head of the ticket. And they did well. They basically picked like a Republican who liked weed, and they did really well, and they probably raised a lot more money. And so they haven't been able to recreate the magic, but it was like they made that, at sacrifice, or that trade-off, to just like go away from their actual ideology and values for somebody who might get, you know, 5 or 6% of the vote. And I think they keep chasing that with worse results, just getting away from their core.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people have missed out on what the Libertarian Party is. So Libertarian Party has historically been a Democrat psyop to essentially pull away from Republican votes, in the same way that the Green Party is a Republican psyop to pull away from Democrat votes. So, you know, both of these parties, they try and find people that, you know, could potentially be disruptive in their own parties and get them siloed in this goofy, you know, social club to essentially like try and pull base people out of doing productive activities, to get them focused on doing unproductive activities and try and pull votes from their opponents. And so, you know, the Libertarian Party attempted to try not to be that and like totally killed their use case.
Right. They didn't know who they were. So when Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who was the, you know, RFK was, there was a lot of money coming in from Republicans and Democrats to make him kind of the psyop that took votes from their opponent. And that's where all the money was focused on this year, this cycle. And libertarians had an opportunity to capitalize on that and to nominate him to be the head of their ticket, because it's not about electing a libertarian. It's about, you know, getting somebody on there to fuck up the Republicans. And who better than the guy who's against the COVID vaccine and seed oils than to do that? But instead they went with Chase Oliver. They didn't know their assignment, and they dropped the bag.
Well, it was kind of interesting, because there's like there's a little bit of split in like the party leadership. So like they chose a candidate in Chase Oliver that fit that. Well, he was abnormal as a candidate, because he was the type of candidate that would pull away from Kamala voters more so than he would for Trump voters, if that makes sense.
Our lead story tonight is a shocking new rise in divorce. Wives are increasingly choosing to end their marriages to pursue their boyfriends, who own Bitcoin, at the expense of their no-coiner husbands.
We are seeing a shocking trend of wives actually leaving their husbands for their boyfriends.
In an unprecedented ruling, an Idaho court rules that you may be eligible for alimony if your wife leaves you for her boyfriend and he owns Bitcoin.
Family court's coming for Bitcoin? That's what our legal analysts are saying. But what does this mean for you?
Hi, my name is Steven Lupka. I'm the head of private clients and family offices at Swan Bitcoin. But you may know me from your favorite Bitcoin podcasts. If your girlfriend divorces her husband and he finds out you own Bitcoin, your savings may be at risk. More and more Bitcoiners who have girlfriends with no-coiner husbands are getting stuck with alimony payments, sometimes paid in Lightning due to family courts tightening regulations. At Swan, we strive to be the personal concierge you can trust to help you navigate the complexities of saving in Bitcoin, as well as help you protect your savings from greedy family courts. If you're a high net worth individual, family office, or just anyone who owns at least 0.5 Bitcoin, you may be eligible for Swan Private Services. If your girlfriend is talking about leaving her husband for you when Bitcoin reaches 100K, visit swan.com/private and learn how Swan can walk the walk for you or your family.
Right, and early on the process, there was an opportunity to nominate Dave Smith, and they would have been able to get on the Joe Rogan podcast with that nomination probably 5 or 6 times instead of, you know, I don't think Chase Oliver went on the podcast. Only Trump and J.D. Vance did.
Yeah, I mean, Dave Smith was on. And I think this is probably, you know, a call that Dave Smith likely had before the selection. Somebody from the right or the Trump administration probably called him up and said, hey, Dave, like, you're too good of a Democrat psyop. Like, if you actually want, you know, Ron Paul to do something, you know, if you want his retirement home to be somewhere near the White
House. Just endorse us. Just join with us.
Yeah. Yeah. Or don't run. Because, like, we don't want a popular podcaster running, because that'll
right. Roll. Which is what he did. He dropped out, but he didn't just drop out. He endorsed Trump and over the Libertarians.
Yes, very interesting.
And he was big on RFK too. He was a big he platformed RFK a lot as well, which was again more evidence towards the real style with RFK, not Libertarians or Green Party.
Well, my question now is the Libertarian Party, you know, essentially over, kind of in the same way that SNL is? Like, are those two of the biggest casualties of this election cycle?
I don't think so. I think that they have to get back to their roots. They have to. There's that old video when Gary Johnson, of course, was debating for the nomination, and they asked him, should people have to have a driver's license to drive a car? And there was people on stage who were screaming, no, that is a compromise of our sovereignty. And Gary Johnson said, yeah, I think it's okay to have tests and licenses for cars. They have to get back to the type of candidate who would never, ever, ever compromise on driver's licenses. Those are antithetical. They do not follow the, you know, what's that? Do no harm principle. The non-aggression principle, the NAP, you know, seatbelts violate NAP. And they need to get back to a candidate who understands that and holds those values true.
Yeah. Non-KYC driving, non-KYC voting.
Exactly.
Abolish KYC entirely.
No age of consent for smoking cigarettes. Yeah.
Well, I would be willing to compromise with the status a little bit on this one, which is, you know, you could still have an age of consent, but you could override the state of age of consent with parental permission.
If the parent, you can't just, a kindergartner just can't smoke cigarettes at school because he has enough sats in his Wallet Satoshi app to zap some decent non-KYC cigarettes at recess. Your parents have to sign a permission slip.
Yeah. Kind of in the same way, like, if you want your kid to learn how to drive drunk safely in driver's ed, I think while it's illegal for children to consume alcohol, you know, they could have a permission slip signed for them
if you're trying to do no harm, wouldn't you rather the driver's education course include drinking and driving? So you're gonna do it, you might as well have training so that when you're in that situation, you can be safe.
Yeah, I think this is one of the biggest complaints with just the education system in general, is like that a lot of kids struggle with and feel is that they don't experience enough real world scenarios, and they feel ill prepared as they go into the world as adults.
Right, you don't want to be an overprotective helicopter parent and not teach your kids how to drive drunk before they go to college.
Yeah, I mean, what better way to do that? I mean, like, imagine how drunk the driver's ed teachers have to be if their job is to, their full-time job is to teach 16-year-old kids how to drive.
And I think I know a lot of police officers who have said, you know, if they pull over a teenager for drinking and driving, but their, you know, their parents are in the car with them, it's like, you know, the parents would say, would you rather my teenager be out drinking and driving by themselves, or would you rather they be with me? I'm their parent. And it kind of, yeah, like just make it home safely, like at least you're doing it responsibly.
Well, yeah, I mean, the big news is the price is going up.
Who do we think is driving the price up today? You think this is Trump buying for the reserve?
I think it's a lot of different factors. I think one of the biggest factors driving it up is all the, so Dennis Porter has been documenting, so he has a lot of politicians reaching out to him for the first time. A lot of politicians are learning about who Dennis Porter is. And he is of the opinion that he is driving the price up, which I would definitely say he's not solely responsible, but he's a catalyst for it, for sure.
Well, yeah, and I think that now that Ron Paul is going to be in the Doge agency with Elon Musk, I think that people might be buying Bitcoin because this, if Ron Paul's there, we might end the Fed on day one. I don't know.
What do you think the odds of them actually ending the Fed on day one is? Because I think the chances are they're not zero. It's definitely a non-zero chance, but I don't think it's very high chance.
If the price of Bitcoin on January 20th is 85,000, I don't think that the chance is very high. But if the price of Bitcoin on day one, when they free Ross, is, you know, 150,000, then I think the clock starts there. They got 24 hours, and I think the price action will reflect. It'll be like Polymarket.
So you think that Ross is actually going to be with Swan in any way? I saw that you broke that story.
There's just chatter from inside sources that Corey is looking to pursue. You know, now he's no longer there. Sam Callahan is no longer there. Brady Swenson is a little too old to really be the like premier podcast at Swan. So they're looking for a new replacement for this next bull market. And they're looking at Ross Ulbricht because they're trying to use Ross Ulbricht, you know, it would kind of fuel their reputation as being kind of too compliant. Having somebody like Ross Ulbricht as like the lead of their podcast, you know, flagship podcast.
That'll be pretty interesting. Like I imagine, Ross probably has a lot of pent-up energy. Like he's ready to appear on a lot of podcasts. He's spent 10 years of not appearing on podcasts.
Right. What do you think his podcast schedule is going to look like during this, you know, Trump's first year in office? Ross Ulbricht's, once he gets released.
I wonder what the odds of him going on Talk 2 are early on.
He owes her, I think, for that.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, Haley's definitely attractive. She's no Kaylee. But she's up there. And I think besides like Jessica Vaughn, and I don't know, is Lynn Alden a big free Rosser? I don't think I've seen her tweet about that or post on Noster.
I think she's posted that on Noster only.
Okay.
And less of an endorsement for freeing Ross and more of like this is my base case as a macro analyst, what will happen?
So Haley was like the first noteworthy hot babe to jump on the free Ross train.
Right, right.
And if there's one way to get Donald Trump's attention, it's to be a hot babe. You know what I mean?
Yes, like Laura Loomer.
You think Laura Loomer's hot?
Yeah, I think that is probably the political or the government or the Republican version of Lynn Alden is hot in Bitcoin.
Interesting.
If you don't think Laura Loomer's hot, like I think that maybe you might be like a Democrat plant undercover trying to sabotage the campaign.
Well, we should definitely do a Twitter poll to determine
who's hotter.
You want to do a who's hotter? Lynn Alden versus Laura Loomer, Or
yes, yes. Who would you rather? Would you rather? Would you rather bang Laura Loomer or Lynn Alden? One night in paradise in El Salvador, Bitcoin Beach, with a hotel right there, opens up to the ocean view. One night, Laura Loomer or Lynn Alden.
So you think you've established that Laura Loomer's hot? Do you think she's a real journalist?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She's the first journalist at a Bitcoin conference to take Jack Dorsey on. She was screaming at Jack Dorsey, telling him to say Lynn Alden is hot, and he wouldn't say it. And they cuffed Laura Loomer and they took her out.
Which conference was this? I don't think I heard about this story.
This is Bitcoin Miami in 2021 at the Wynwood. Peter McCormick talks about this because he was the moderator at the time, and they brought Jack Dorsey out, and that's when Jack Dorsey revealed that he had shaved his head and grown a beard and wore Bitcoin t-shirts, and he was talking about how Bitcoin was the most important, you know, asset for the future. And Laura Loomer stood up. She was in the front row and she screamed at Jack Dorsey over his censorship, because at the time he still was a huge majority owner of Twitter, and they were censoring people's ability to say that Lynn Alden's hot on Twitter. Your account would get suspended at the time. And eventually they had to drag out with like security. They dragged Laura Loomer off away. She was screaming at Peter McCormick a little bit too, telling Peter McCormick to ask Jack Dorsey why he doesn't want people to say Lynn Alden's hot on Twitter.
Interesting.
Yeah, you can find it on YouTube. She was screaming pretty loud.
You know who Laura Loomer looks like she's related to?
Sydney Sweeney?
No, Gosla from Riot.
Oh, yes. Yes, the like director of their financial operations over at Riot.
Yeah, the director of Excel spreadsheets at Riot.
She's kind of a female Ward Cell. She complains on Twitter a lot about not being able to find a Bitcoin husband.
She's still doing that? Because I haven't seen her
Not so much anymore, but
it's because...
She listened to the podcast, I guess.
Well, the reason why was because Bitcoin didn't go up enough yet.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe she found... I don't know. I mean, I think like one of the most successful ways to date, and Jessica Hodler really proved this to the world, is like if you want, I don't know if it works as well for men, but if you're a woman and you're out there, and you tweet about wanting a man in your life, it'll probably manifest itself a lot faster.
Right. And then you've got like one of friends of our show, Ninja Granny, who she is in love with people like Svetsky and Robert Breedlove, but she doesn't realize it. She thinks that she dislikes the Bushido way, and she dislikes based, you know, meat eating carnivore Bitcoiners. Mm-hmm. But the reason she's so mad is because she thinks they're sexy. She thinks Svetsky's hot, though.
Well, you know, like, most people, they get their dating advice from like early 2000s pop culture movies, right? And like the common, you know, narrative in that is like the way to get a woman to be attracted to you is to kind of play coy, to be distant, to be aloof.
Right.
Right.
Right. To like, when they listen to your podcast, be like, you know, I want to repeal the 19th Amendment. Just get them, you know, to troll them a little bit.
Yeah. It is a pretty interesting tactic, but it's almost like, you know, what we've learned from early 2000s television is that women really just want reverse psychology. Instead of wanting somebody to be assertive and straightforward with them, they want these various mind games.
They just want somebody to listen to them, and part of listening to them means arguing with them. They want somebody to argue with them and listen to them.
Well, I think one of the challenges is, you know, the CIA has been so active in setting standards in our culture of what's culturally appropriate, right?
Right.
And so women have been so conditioned to various psyops that they think that a man caring for them is a man psyoping them.
Right now,
and like, if you're not, I think, these women are like, if this man doesn't care enough to psyop me, then he's probably not worth it.
But the corollary to that, so one of the biggest psyops for men on the internet is porn. And you should try to stay away from that, because it ruins your relationship with women intimately in like real life. It ruins your relationships. But women, their biggest psyop is arguing with people on the internet. When they, instead of arguing with their husbands and nagging their husbands, they're nagging podcasters and people on Twitter. And so when they go home, they just ruins the magic of arguing and making your husband listen to you argue when they're doing it online all day.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the reasons why porn is bad, or I don't know, bad might be the wrong word for it, but it has negative trade-offs, is because in most porn videos, you know, the man doesn't have to psyop the woman. You know what I mean?
Right. Right. It's, he sweeps her off her feet instead of, you know, pseudo spiffs her mind.
Yeah. Most of the women in porn, they're often the ones essentially initiating it all.
Right. And it's on their terms, right? Like they can't, the danger of getting like a sexist meme in your DMs doesn't exist, because they're in charge of the relationship.
And I think this is one of the reasons why orange cells just have trouble dating so much, is like, you know, they're getting their ideas on relationships from porn, and they're getting their ideas on relationships from CIA.
Disney, yeah, CIA. Before we got into the basics, do you have any other topics that you wanted to bring up?
Well, I think that, I guess one of the final topics I wanted to point out, so Mike Germano tweeted at PodConf referencing, you know, the Bugle, essentially saying that the most creative minds in the industry are us, and we're kind of running over everybody with our superior credentials. I just wanted to say that was like a pretty big acknowledgement, that I felt pretty good about. And we were talking about it a little bit about before we started recording about, you know, why has the Bugle been so successful? And a big part of it is because of our boosters. It's because we have been able to pierce the world of pseudo spoofing through real organic engagement with individuals.
Right. Right. We are able to report the news that matters, because we can cut through the noise that the CIA, that big donors, corporations, Tether, big Bitcoin companies, Russia. We can get through all the noise that they're pseudo spoofing into the timeline. And that's what, you know, that's why the Bugle might only get 10 or 15 likes and retweets on an article, while, you know, Bitcoin Magazine might get thousands. But if you control for the pseudo spoofing, you know, we have the pound for pound, the best news in the business.
We're circulating through Bitcoin company Slack channels, and that's what something that I think is really important. The reason why we're doing that is because our listeners, like you, are the ones dropping the links in those Slack channels. And it doesn't really matter if you're out there reporting the news. Like, it only matters if, you know, the news that you're reporting gets circulated,
right,
and spread and disseminated. And like, we have an uphill battle to fight because we're not beholden to the CIA, because we're anti-PodConf. you know, there's some strong forces preventing us from being as amplified as we could be.
Right.
But those forces are being defeated.
Right. The value of a post or some content could have 100,000 likes and retweets, but the real measure of success or the real measure of circulation and impact is how many of these, how many pieces of your content are shared in the group chats? How many pieces of your content are texted between family members and friends, people from your meetup, the people that you know, the people that you trust? How much of that information is circulating? How much of that content is circulating kind of below the surface, the subterranean culture? That's kind of where you can find more signal.
Yeah. And I think we're just meeting a market demand, which is, you know, people are really tired of, you know, kind of the fiat world, and they wanted an alternative to PodConf, and they wanted
value for value.
Like, Greaser's Gulch is like it's a real thing, you know, and people are finding refuge.
Right. In your attention is valuable. So our content is going to be, you know, hopefully an equivalent value for your time. It's not just an advertisement.
Yeah.
For somebody else's node.
I think it's important to, like, you know, one, to acknowledge what he said and how important that is. But two, to look at, like, the different incentive structures of, like, we're directly incentivized for, you know, producing stuff that's valuable to our audience, whereas everybody else is incentivized to producing content that is valuable for their advertisers.
Right.
And that,
exactly.
Like, you when you boost us, like, that's our incentive. You know, that's what we're going for. Like, we want to get that cigarette money. We're going to hustle for it.
We are really, so there's a real question. Captured.
I think there's, you know, this is a rhetorical question, but I think everybody's going to come to the same conclusion on it, which is, you know, which direction is content going to be more valuable? Is it going to be more valuable when the audience is monetizing it or when the advertisers are? You know, it's going to be more.
Yeah. What's the better return on investment? Is it the analytics that you can show? Do those analytics, do those engagements, how often do those turn into, you know, conversions for you to make money to get a new account versus, you know, the kind of engagement you can get through a more genuine, authentic value for value system or a more authentic value for value network? Like, how, you know, if somebody shares your content or your, you know, ideas in group chats, because it, you know, the people who stand behind it, is that worth more than 1,000 likes that you can show on your analytics dashboard?
Well, I think it feels better, you know, sharing the value for value content in group chats, because you know that you're not essentially supporting somebody's advertiser that you might not you might not agree with. You know what I mean?
Right. Right.
So I think that's one of the powerful things about it. But I do want to say one last thing about the selection. So, like, your endorsement was pretty big, but I think Kaylee's tweet might have pushed things over the edge. So she said, "I won't sleep with anyone who votes for Harris." Quote tweeting you. You said a lot of dudes are going to be extremely frustrated when they realize voting for Harris still won't get them laid.
It's going to be a lot of cope when that realization, you know, even though I shouldn't win, but, you know, I voted for her, and it doesn't get them laid.
No, it definitely will not get them laid. I think that's one of the big takeaways from the selection. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. I don't think politics are going away anytime soon. This state of Super Bowl, while it wasn't as entertaining as ones previously, was still pretty, you know, big and relevant.
There's no sudden death overtime this year.
No. At least not yet. There's still a lot that can happen between now and January, but we shall see. But yeah, anyway, so my favorite part of the show, let's get into the boost. First boost is from Miss Hanalei. So the first series of two boosts are hilarious, back to back. We'll start with the first one for Miss Hanalei, 420 for 15,151 sats. She says, "I voted for Harris. Libertarians are a waste of time." Well, do you think that, like, women that voted for Harris, they're going to have a harder time getting laid too?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the people who voted for her were not already getting laid, were doing or trying to get laid as a result. They're going to be very disappointed. I think it's women and men alike.
Yeah. It's really funny. So Ms. Hanalei has had zero problems with getting laid so far. So it'll be interesting to see. It seems like she's kind of running ruckshaw through.
She's having a hard time getting laid with the people she really wants to get laid by. But she's not having trouble getting laid in general. In fact, you know, I feel like if my experience is similar to some of these other guys she's engaged with, hers might be considered, you know, borderline. You know, I'm just saying if the genders were reversed, people would be in jail.
Who do you think she wants to get laid by? Miss Hanalei, who do you want to get laid by?
Let us know
in the next boost.
So, yeah.
Well, going off of that one, the next one, so our good friend We All Eat says, for 10,021 sats, says, LMFAO, Miss Hoddle, he means Hoddle, not, I'm pretty sure, broke up with me and swore off sex. Okay. So maybe she doesn't want to get laid by anybody now. LFG Trumpers, heard she went and sucked off white dude for Harris, Rod Faggot Palmer. She's a dick greaser for sure.
Well.
Wow.
It sounds
that
like
was probably.
It sounds like he was with Miss Hoddle not when he wrote this because they were both drunk. But that's a mistake. I've never been a white dude for Harris. I never joined any of those. That was Terrence. But still appreciate the boost We All Eat.
If you were secretly a white dude for Harris, that would be one of the most elaborate schemes ever concocted.
I just don't have that time.
I think you prioritize your time better than that. I mean, imagine what it would take to, like, hang out with Terrence and Mike Brock in the same room.
Right, right. That's I listen to a lot of Bitcoin podcasts, but I do not have the time preference low enough yet to hang out with people like Terrence and Brock.
Well, so We All Eat suggesting that Miss Hoddlenut swore off sex. That's kind of been a theme going around. This is something that's really fascinating that happens in selections. It's almost like New Year's resolutions, where people make these declarations of things. They say they're never going to be on Twitter again. They say, you know, they're moving out of the country. They say that they're swearing off sex, and then they do none of the above. So we'll see how long that lasts for. Well, we'll probably have an answer next week of who she wants to bang is my prediction.
Yeah, that sounds right. All right, so next one. Pies the Pleb, 100 sats. I refuse to listen to Simply Bitcoin because they have the Compass Mining Cunts as a sponsor. Wow, I didn't know the Compass was still... Are they still advertising for Simply Bitcoin? But yeah, that's one of those where, you know, somebody is chilling for Compass. That's one of those things where it's obviously that is their job. That's what they're getting paid to do because nobody else would do that at this point.
Yeah. Well, that's why, you know, having these alternatives, you know, to be able to boost the content creators directly is
way
important.
Around this, yeah.
Well, we appreciate the boost.
Well, Pines also boosted 100 cents two other times. Fuck KYC and fuck the system. 4-cigarette, 5-cigarette emojis, and fuck Chase Oliver. Anyone who goes for him is a fucking retard.
Well, I endorsed Chase Oliver, but I didn't vote for him. So I guess I,
right.
I'm not a retard, according to Pies. I'm safe. I survived that cut. Well, I mean, I think most of the people voting for Chase Oliver are probably disaffected Democrats.
Right.
A good portion of them.
Because Jill Stein wasn't on the ballot in that state.
Well, I don't think Jill Stein went on enough podcasts for anybody to really hear about who she is.
That's true.
I think that's the issue. Chase definitely went on more podcasts. Why do the Fountain Boosts get ordered weird? Are you looking at it on the web or on the app?
I'm looking at it on the app. I think it just mixes in the some of the Noster posts with the boost. I guess the last one is from ETC on board. Hashtag LNAs or hashtag CTV. Let's not bring politics. When the election's over, let's not bring politics into the boost with the hashtags here. But 250 sats, three laughing emojis. So thank you, BTC on board. Got politics since.
I do want to read. So there were a few Noster posts. So Shatterack, yeah. Cody. I don't want to read them all. But there was one I wanted to read from Everything Satoshi, who said, at NVK, does Bitcoin need a coin kite block clock after all? The Rolex block clock, I can see you not doing because of privacy reasons, but I think about the kinky Bitcoiners and give them an air gap coin kite butt plug. So one of the things that Everything Satoshi's talking about here is this idea of OPSEC, which is that you would kind of out yourself if you're walking around with a Rolex that read Bitcoin time instead of normal time. You go to the supermarket, people look at your watch and they say, oh, wow, you know, that guy doesn't have fiat time on his wrist. He's a Bitcoiner. You know, maybe we can steal shit from him. You know, this problem is solved when you increase your anonymity set. So what needs to happen is for more people to listen to Bitcoin podcasts, more people to have Bitcoin stickers on their cars, more people to have, you know, like SHA-256 license plates, you know, various things like that. More people using Bitcoin time. And when the anonymity set is big enough, you're kind of not sticking out by conforming with the rest of the crowd. You know what I mean? So that's how we fix that. So this question of, does Bitcoin need a coin kite block clock after all? I would argue that Bitcoin doesn't really need it in the same way it needs Dennis Porter, but you know, there's some cool things that Bitcoiners, you know, because like people are faced with this question of like, what weird trinkets can they buy? They're never going to ROI, you know, and a block clock and a BitAx kind of sit in the same realm. You know what I mean?
Right. I get ordinals too.
They're like status symbols that people can have.
Exactly. It's keeping up with the Joneses, but keeping up with the Anons.
Well, that kind of wraps up the boost section. We do have a couple announcements. So, you know, as always, we're working on some projects behind the scenes. So one of the things that Rod and I did last week was we went on our friend Rayo's podcast, the Vanu podcast, who I use as a publisher sometimes. So he's helped me get my music on Spotify and, you know, all the KYC applications, as well as, you know, I'm working on a book for him to publish. That was a lot of fun. You could check that out. Probably go on Fountain and search the Vanu podcast. I'm going to be listening to that one. I put it on my 40 hours a podcast because I already forgot the majority of what we talked about. But yeah, I plan on boosting it. That was a good time.
Yeah, that was a good time. You should check that one out.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to not having to talk about the selection. You know, it's taken up a few weeks of the majority of our content, and I think politics is still going to be pretty, like, we're going to have to report on it, but it's not going to be the predominant narrative or topic that we're talking about. So that's an announcement. I think this is kind of the end of politics for the most part. We can start talking about more important things. You got anything you want to highlight or shout out?
No. I think that checked out the Vanu podcast. I think that's a good, that's going to be a good, like, if you have libertarian friends, like, how do you introduce them to Bitcoin? So I think it's a good first step. Listen to this podcast.
Totally. Yeah, I think that kind of wraps up the show for today. And we got some big things cooking in the future. It just takes time to produce them, and we're working with without PodConf money or PodConf resources here. So stay tuned. And oh yeah, okay, one last thing. I debuted a piece on the BitPunk FM podcast that I'm pretty excited about. It was a glimpse into the future of, Donald Trump talking to Dennis Porter at the end of his next term after experiencing his first real Bitcoin halving.
I'm excited to check that out.
Well, thank you everybody for dropping into this edition of Beagle Weekly, and we'll catch you next week.
Money is broken, and she wrote the book. She's a macro expert and has good looks. Her hair bowled back behind one ear. She's one of the most important voices to hear. Dissecting the world with wisdom and grit. She is light years ahead of the average midwit. On the pod contour, she has lasers in her eyes. Dismantling all of the fiat psyops and lies. Whether on Nostr or Twitter, her posts are on fire. She's the type of woman that all men desire. There's only one way to tell if you're gay. She's a smoking hot babe who is here to stay. If you wanna know the future, you better well listen. Lynn Alden is hot, knows macro, and her black hair glistens. Whether hand-to-hand combat or just plain debating, she will kick your ass, but that goes without saying. While she has brains, she also has muscles. Never challenge her if you don't expect to tussle. Always spitting molten hot lava on Bitcoin podcast. Plant stop to listen to her macro forecasts. If you don't think she's hot, you're definitely gay. She's not a woman to be trifled with or ever betray. Whether or not store Twitter, her posts are on fire. She's the type of woman that all men desire. There's only one way to tell if you're gay. She's a smoking hot babe who is here to stay. If you wanna know the future, you better well listen. Lynn Alden is hot, knows macro, and her black hair glistens. Just plain debating, she will kick your ass, but that goes without saying. While she has brains, she also has muscles. Never challenge her if you don't expect to tussle. Always spitting molten hot lava on Bitcoin podcast. Plant stock to listen to her macro forecast. If you don't think she's hot, you're definitely gay. She's not a woman to be trifled with or ever betray. Whether or not store Twitter, her posts are on fire. She's the type of woman that all men desire. There's only one way to tell if you're gay. She's a smoking hot babe who is here to stay. If you wanna know the future, you better well listen. Lynn Alden is hot, knows macro.